Inertial dampeners to stop, atomic radiators to power, radio voice engaged. All right, folks, thanks for tuning into the BAMF podcast. This is your host, Mike Lafferty, and I am here with a couple of luminaries in the RPG field. Kevin CM is showing up later. Sean Patrick Cannon is here with us, as is Mr. John Dunn from Milieu Revia. How you guys doing?
Doing great, Mike. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Now, obviously, anyone who follows RPG news knows that there's some big news involving Mr. Fannin. We'll be touching on very shortly. But the ostensible topic of this podcast was some of the problems you can have with a successful Kickstarter. Because as you probably noticed, you know, after you fund, sometimes things get real difficult. So we thought we would, you know, talk about some of the challenges and try to give whatever advice, you know, we can. And I don't want to make anybody wait too long, so let's just go ahead and touch on, you know, the big, you know, exciting news, which is Sean. And Sean, we're neighbors, by the way. I'm in Broomfield. I know you're in Thornton.
Why are we not hooked up, man? Why are we not got a cup of coffee or something?
We should drink.
We should drink.
I'm Irish or Scottish. It's the way of our people. then find an English guy and make him answer for his ancestor's sins. But
Well, you know, then you know the maxim, the difference between an Irish wedding and an Irish funeral is one less drunk. So, for all the Irish out there who take offense at that, well, I apologize. Whatever, it's a funny joke. So, yeah, all right. So, big news.
So big news. You are working with Pinnacle to translate Rifts into Savage Worlds.
Yeah. It's a joint operation between my own publishing company, Evil Beagle Games, which is the development studio. Palladium Books authorized the whole thing, and they'll be overseeing and helping out. And Pinnacle is the publisher. They'll be handling production, art, getting the books out through distribution, and all that kind of stuff. So the cool thing is those books are all going to have three logos on the back, right? I'm going to have my logo on there with my cool little beagle with its horns and its 666 dice next to Pinnacle and Palladium. So, kind of excited, I have to admit. So is the rest of the Beagle team. Corinne, my beloved, who's our editor-in-chief, and Ross Watson, who's actually going to be the developer on the project, as well as helping to contribute a lot of content. And the three of us are going to be working together to put stuff through the pipeline over to Pinnacle, who are going to do the amazing job that they always do on their books. So it's going to be fantastic. And it's going to be a line. That's one thing that I can say. It's not just one book trying to cram a bunch of stuff in. Kevin wanted to see a bunch of books, and we're excited to be allowed to do them. So it's going to be a presentation of a lot of great Rifts material within Savage Worlds terms.
Well, cool. And not to try to pin you down at all, but I'm sure someone's already asked, what's the rough, loose timeline for the first book?
That's been announced, so I can say that Shane and I are hoping to have a core book out. Player's Guide is what we're calling it at this point, although it's going to be different than what people... It's not going to be... Like, here's the full book, and then we shave a bunch of stuff off and call it a Player's Guide. This is going to be a complete book of its own, and we hope to have that out by Christmas time.
Oh, that's ambitious. Okay, cool.
Yeah, which is why we can't go all day on this thing, because, you know, and that's a hope for thing. It's you know, we're not announcing an firm date. That's just that was in the press release. So I can go so far to say we hope that we can get something out by then. And that's, you know, again, there's no firm dates, no commitments there.
Okay, some people have expressed surprise that you guys were able to get this license from Palladium. Is there any kind of story behind that? Are they incriminating Polaroids somewhere? How'd this happen?
I asked. Mm-hmm. And it's really that simple. The thing is,
that was the secret.
I've been friends with Kevin for a long time. He actually wanted me to lead the Nightbane project for him a long while back, and I thought about it, but at the time it wasn't a good fit for me where I was and what I was doing. But we've always been friends. We've gotten along. I mean, I know everybody has their different relationships with people. But the thing was, at the time I was working for Drive-Thru RPG and RPG Now, and I was operating as a marketing communications guy. But I was also helping with business development. And one of my, you know, my target goals while I was working for them is I'd really love to get Palladium Books up on Drive-Thru RPG. And, you know, every person who tried was like, complete fail, whatever. And it was mostly Kevin was operating on a, you know, he was a few years behind everybody in terms of technology and how he approached things. He was just going the old school way to get stuff done and, you know, just plugging away with what he knew. And so I figured if someone took the opportunity and time to just go and sit down with him and show him face-to-face on his computer screen how it would work, maybe that would help. So I was living in Tennessee at the time. I drove up to Michigan, and we visited for a couple of days. And I sat down with him, and I showed him how it worked, and I showed his team how it worked, and they're like, you know what, let's give this a shot. So I landed him for DriveThruRPG, which was a big coup, right? We went out to dinner that night, and he was like, Kevin, we've been friends a long time. I got this idea I'd like to pitch to you. It's not having to do anything with DriveThru. He says, well, Sean, most people think I'm like this horrible guy to work with. But most of the time, people just jump in and go do stuff and then hope I'll forgive them for it. Or they ask all, you know, like, hey, Kevin, you have to do this because this. And, yeah, I'm a cranky guy. I'd always be told what I have to do. So, you know, don't worry about it, though. Just pitch the idea. So I said, all right, I want to do Savage Rifts. I think Rifts would be awesome in the Savage Worlds game system, and I've got all the context to make it happen. And he said, that sounds interesting. Let's talk about it. Let's make it happen. That was it. You know, me, him, and Shane sat down at Gen Con after that visit and hammered out the basics. And at that point, it just came down to the timing of when it was going to be good for us all. And that timing became now. You know, the resource was there. The resources were there. The time to put it in the slot was there. Anything that involves Disney is going to take a little more time than you imagine, and believe it or not, and Kevin's talked about this, as I'm comfortable saying this, is Disney has the options on the Rifts movie.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, Jerry Bruckheimer originally had it, and then he took it to Disney after a while. So Disney has the options on a Rifts movie, as far as I know, and it's all been sitting in the background, and so we had to wait and let all that stuff get played out, too. It had nothing to do with anything other than them saying, okay, we're fine with this. So here we go. It was just a simple matter of I asked, and we all agreed it was a great idea. So here we go.
Okay, well, sweet. Well, I think we've run this horse into the ground, because I know you said there's not much you can say about this project right now.
Yeah, the details are going to, you know, be coming down the pipeline as we can. The last thing I'll say is that the people who are local here in the Denver area, keep an eye on. You may want to see if you can get to Con on the Range, because it is my plan to show some of the first playtest stuff there. And you'll be have to sign a thing saying I promise not to tell anybody, because it's still going to be kind of tight security on it. But if you want a chance to get a very early playtest experience with it, that's when I'm planning on doing it.
All right. I just Googled Denver Con on the Range, and I didn't get anything. So can you give us some details about that?
Con on the Range is being done by the guys, at least one of the guys who's involved with it, Enchanted Grounds. They had a small little event in January that went well, so they're going again here coming up middle of June. Con on the Range, most of their information is on Facebook, so if you find Con on the Range, actually, if you just find me on Facebook, Sean Patrick Fanner on Facebook, I just posted today about it.
Okay, cool. So that's how you can find out about that. And, all right, well, hey, let's turn the page on that subject. Thank you so much for, you know, giving us the information. Appreciate that. I don't want to make you cross any lines, because I know you mentioned there's a lot of things that can't be said just yet.
Yep.
We do want to talk about Kickstarters, like we said, the ostensible topic, and just want to bring up, while we're on the subject, Walt and I are doing Kickstarter right now, Supervillain Handbook.
We've got
8 hours left, and we just crossed the 5,600 stretch goal. We now have Mutants and Mastermind support.
Fantastic. Congratulations, guys.
As of like 10 minutes ago, so yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
To transition into the conversation immediately, I will say congratulations and I'm sorry, because each time you hit a stretch goal, you have just committed yourself to a massive amount of additional work that you may have not originally been planning on doing. And, you know, that was the thing I did to myself in the worst possible way. As I was joking ahead before we started recording, you've got the perfect juxtaposition of a guy who made every mistake you could make and still have a not failed Kickstarter. That would be this guy with the two thumbs going at him. And then you got the guy who, I don't remember, but I think they did their Kickstarter either after mine or right around the same ballpark, and they're already done delivering all of their deliverables.
Yeah, it was a little bit after yours. We were in September to October of 2013.
Yeah, you launched your Kickstarter after mine, and you're done. I hate you.
So we finished it a while ago, too.
Yeah, just to pause for our listeners, that's John Dunn, a very talented man with Mueller Via Press. And John, your Kickstarter, if I'm not mistaken, was the very successful Accursed for Savage Worlds, right?
That's correct, yeah. We did Accursed, which is a dark fantasy horror setting where the characters get to play monsters who are focused upon either trying to decide if they want to embrace their monsterhood or if they want to deny it as they try and fight against the witches who have conquered the fantasy land of Morden. It's a Savage World setting that we had really good success. We did the Kickstarter in September through October of 2013 and then released the book in December of that year.
Unbelievable, yeah. Just fantastic. And again, the crossovers are interesting because, well, literally crossover, because Shinetar and Morden have been crossed over via a couple projects.
Well, let's touch on that. You guys released one very recently, didn't you?
Yep.
Right. So the deal that Sean and I had known each other for some time, and Sean's managing editor, I believe is his title, of Evil Beagle is Ross Watson, who's also a good friend of mine.
Managing
director. Ross is also one of the key creatives that was involved in the Accursed project as well, of course. And as Sean's Shinetar project was ramping up, we were in the latter development stages on Accursed, and we said, hey, Sean, how about we write something for you, you write something for us, that way we'll be nicely cross-promoting the two projects. And he was kind enough to get the adventure done for Accursed a little while ago, and I just finally finished wrapping up the crossover adventure that I was doing for him.
Yeah, and both, but well, his book, Darkest Tides, which we're really excited with, that's an overt, very direct, here's a hole between the two worlds, the characters are crossing over and stuff's happening. Whereas in mine, that I did for them, it's all Morden, except there's the one character you can encounter in the town, who, as it turns out, was a low-level priest in Shinetar before he accidentally came across and had to adapt to being there. So it was a nice little tag there. Plus, in the official shared world campaign that Shinetar does, there's been a ton of stuff coming over from Morden into Shinetar, including... one of the things they did is a fulfillment for a Kickstarter, which was a game that they did at Gen Con that Ross ran. I think it was Ross. I don't know if you ran one of those or not.
We ran two tables. Ross ran one, and I ran one.
But essentially, it killed
the Chimera.
The Chimera, one of the witches. Well, it didn't really kill her, though. She just got blasted through the dimensions, and she's been rampaging around in Shinetar for a while. So we had a massive story arcs dealing with her, they just booted her out of Shinetar. So, hey, Morden fans, Accursed fans, you never know. She might come back one day. So we've been having a lot of fun with that kind of stuff. Awesome. It also worked really well to cross promote the Kickstarters, too.
Yeah, that was my big selling point on it, was the fact that we were able to tap into both of our fan bases and point them to each other and say, hey, take a look at this.
Yeah, and it got a lot of people excited. One guy put a lot of money in specifically so he could create something in the content of Shinetar and the content of Morden, and then that was what Darkest Tides does, is it's the first part of... I mean, I plan to do some web stuff and some other things for it to kind of build it and flesh it out for him on the Shinetar side of things. But basically, it allowed him to tie his two content creation goals together between the two Kickstarters.
Now, when you're seeing all this extra content, even though we had just said that it puts a big strain on creators because it might not be something you expect during a Kickstarter, aren't these the kind of things that, even though you're going to get a lot of work out of it, is firing you up because you get excited that people are getting excited about your project?
And therein lies, yeah, well, he's right, but therein lies the problem for me. Corinne is like biting her tongue over here. She's sitting next to me. Beware enthusiasm would be her biggest admonition to anybody else. What? She can't help herself. What?
Also, make sure you budget yourself pay.
Yeah, okay, so that was the other thing. I was going to get into that. That was the biggest mistake I made. Spoiler alert, we're going to talk about how I screwed myself royally by not paying myself on my Kickstarter.
You know, I feel you on that because I've actually had that happen to me. I was I won't name the publisher, because he's a good friend of mine, I still love him, but we were doing Kickstarter for a book I wrote for him. And once we funded, I was like, okay, you know, we didn't talk financials, where's my cut from this? He goes, oh, well. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that kind of comes back to the mantra of freelancing, never, ever work without a contract.
That's great advice.
So the point is, beware enthusiasm, as you say. I got so excited during my Kickstarter that I promised everything. I jumped in. We can do this. We can do this. We can do this. All because I wanted to get me more people excited and more people buying into the idea, which they did. I mean, I was very successful as a salesman, and I successed myself right into a nightmare. So there's that. Whereas John, you know, is a man of numbers.
So
he's a man of letters too, yeah. But he's a man of numbers. He knows his way around them. He figured out from the beginning what they would and would not do, could and could not do, and how to get it done.
Right. That was my big mantra as I went through the whole process. That was plan, 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 plan. And we planned for every eventuality. We planned from the, okay, what's the bare minimum we need to do this in the way that we feel the project requires? Because we wanted to take a look at things and say, if we're going to do this project, we're not going to do it half-assed. We want to make sure that we're doing it at a bare minimum quality level. And that was where we went and set our goals. And as Corinne chimed in, we did make sure that we were paying ourselves. We didn't pay ourselves at the rate we would like to get as freelancers, but we did pay ourselves at a justifiable rate. And then we made it a point to budget for everything. Mm-hmm. And then when we went from there was we had our baseline that we were willing to work from. We planned for, okay, what's the best case success scenario? And we had a series of stretch goals where we planned out to, you know, $250,000. And then we had another set of stretch goals that we planned out to if we're only funding at the last minute, we'll announce this set of stretch goals. And then we kind of, you know, had a couple of plans for in between saying, well, if it's going this way, we're going to do, this is our fast pace, this is our slower pace. And all of that was budgeted to really just a painful degree.
Here's the irony. The irony here is that they consulted with me. They actually met with me and consulted with me about, hey, Sean, so what is your advice about doing this Kickstarter? And I'm really glad they listened to some of my ideas about promotion and stuff like that, and I'm really glad they listened to what I said and did the opposite. A few other things, because as planned as I thought I was going into this thing, I made up stuff on the fly. I said, hey, I think we could do this, and I added it in. I think we could get away with this, and then I got everybody else who was involved in the project excited, and they were like, well, we could throw this in, and we could do that. Oh, God, it was crazy, crazy stupid. So totally the opposite. Had a framework, right? Had a base framework of what we were going to do, but I even got that wrong. That's the worst part, is I got, because I looked at existing written material, and I was like, sort of, I have this stuff over in these files, and I'm pretty sure I can take that basic, that module of stuff that I have for this, and I can turn that into a book, like, really fast. And then I went in and looked at what I actually had, which I should have done before I committed to any of this, and realized how bad it was, and how light it was. And how it wasn't going to get the job done to fulfill the book that I was telling everybody they were going to get. So it manifold, like 5 to 10 times increased each product's actual necessary work. And again, on top of all that, stupid, the most important thing, if I could say most important thing, like if the recording cuts out after this, and you walk away with this, you get what's important here from me. I had this delusional idea that, hey, if we get so much more money over our initial request, that money will just be sitting there, and we can, like, figure out cool stuff to do with it and divvy it out. And it was an idiotic assumption on my part, because every dime of that from, because the guys who actually managed my Kickstarter, they got their side right, and that would be Savage Mojo. They had worked out, okay, this is how much this book will need for art, this is how much this book will need for layout, this is how much book this book will need for all of these things that we're going to provide. And it was down to the wire for every single book that funded. They had it figured out exactly down to the wire what they were going to need to make all these things happen, and I had not planned any of that for me.
And that was giving us a discount.
That was giving us a discount, yes. You're getting another person on the podcast, by the way. Sorry about that. But
hey, Corinne, how you doing?
He knows what she knows what she's talking about, and she'll keep me honest. But yeah, at the end of the day, though, they had to squeeze some money out to give me a laptop because my laptop at the time was dying, and I had been planning on, those were the things I was going to buy with myself with all the extra money I thought we had, of which I hadn't planned any for myself actually. So, yeah, you've got to do that. You absolutely have to. Not only plan to pay yourself for the core funding, what you're going to do, but for each additional thing you're going to tell people you're going to do, plan to pay yourself for that too.
Yeah, you can't budget enough. Make sure you read the fine print on everything you sign, starting with Kickstarter, where they say, hey, we're going to take 3 to 5% and then another 5% off the top. Recognize that that's going to be at least 10%, and then factor in a few extra percentage just in case things go wrong.
I guess we should point out, I mean, you guys had like highly successful Kickstarters. Sean, you raised over $40,000, and John, you raised, I want to say, over $20,000.
Over 20, yeah.
Yeah,
and you guys, my Kickstarter's known for the highest, or one of the highest, it's probably not now, but at the time, it was considered one of the highest dollars per backer. Because I didn't have that many backers. It was like a few hundred backers.
We had 380,
yeah. There was 382 backers, and we got 40-something thousand, 42,000, I think, yeah, out of them. So that was a lot.
Conversely, we had 500 backers to raise $20,000, just for perspective.
Yeah, the IRS comes knocking when you make that much money, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's, you might not be thinking about that, because I know a lot of times people just figure, I'll make, you know, it doesn't enter into the equation often. I know some publishers have been working on RPG Now for years who just kind of treat it like, you know, garage sale money. About the IRS is going to come knocking, but I mean, Kickstarter, well, they do.
Absolutely. Fortunately for Melia Villa, they have a John Dunn, who had that all worked out well before. Fortunately for me, my team is international, so they were covering multiple bases on that at the time. So I'm grateful to MMK and the Savage Mojo team for being on the ball for all that. So all that was fine. It's just none of them, nor could Corinne, shut me up.
I tried.
That got me in so much trouble.
Well, hey, let's talk delivery. Now, we mentioned Cursed has delivered already. And Sean, you said you're still working on getting all your stretch goals delivered. What's your timetable looking like for that? Or is it kind of a catch-as-you-can at this point? Or what's the story?
It's funny. I like to joke with people about, is either the most successful failure in Kickstarter history or the most failed success in Kickstarter history? It's not. Neither of those statements is true. There's been much, much bigger Kickstarters of more epic explosion proportions. But you know, the it's funny because the fact is, I'm not a failed Kickstarter. The core product was funded and delivered, and a number of other add-on stuff has been produced and delivered, and we're still producing and delivering. It's just going really slow. It's consistent, right? Every few weeks, you see something coming out from us.
Absolutely.
It's just not at the rate that was hoped for. And there's just no possible way that it's going to be. We are having to balance that against life. As we talked about the Savage Rich program. Now, here's the thing. Let me be very clear. I have been very communicative with my audience. I haven't done a Big Irish Vlog in a while, and I need to do one of those. Matter of fact, I'm scheduled to do one this weekend to finally kind of go. Because I was waiting so that I could finally say what the thing was. Because I was telling all my fan base and my followers, my backers, that, okay, I've got this huge project in my lap, and I am going to be working on it, and here's why. Because I failed to pay myself. Because I set myself up to do all these books that are much bigger than I originally anticipated, and I made all of these mistakes, but I'm not walking away from this obligation. I'm going to keep pushing to get these books out. Ross Watson has been a champion in helping organize and plan. Corinne has been a champion in taking the stuff that's come in, not just from me, but from everybody, and editing it and getting it in shape and helping me move that ball forward. And we've had some wonderful people who've contributed and stepped up and done some awesome stuff. And for nothing more than, well, I'll take a little percentage on the back end, but mostly because I want to help you. And that's been amazing, and it's because I have this amazing network of people that I communicate with, we continue to push that thing forward. But there was the thing where I had to come forward and say, and communication is like the second most important thing I can possibly have you walk away with. So now if the thing cuts off, you've got the first most important thing, and then the second most important thing is communicate. Stay active with the people. Don't spam them, but tell them what's going on. They will listen. They will understand. Yes, you're going to get complaints. You're going to get people, you know, complaining and saying, oh, my God, I put you all this money, and you're taking forever and whatever. But they're still engaged, and they still care, and they appreciate that more than he just shut up, and he got my money, and there's nothing, because that's the worst thing you could possibly do. So.
And that happens a lot.
You know, yeah. Then there's the major meltdowns where, screw you all. I've got your money, but I can't do this anymore. I hate you. I'm walking away.
The first thing I ever backed got that.
Yeah, the first thing she ever backed got that kind of thing. It's happened to some other people, too.
Yeah, there was a famous web cartoonist, the guy who does pictures for small children, who literally started burning the books. He kind of had a full-on meltdown, and his last Kickstarter update was, hey, here's books, I'm burning them, so go screw yourselves.
Well, and the funny thing is, I understand. I don't accept it. It's not acceptable. It is not justifiable. But there's my inner child, my inner lizard, that does understand the emotion of, oh, God, what have I done? I can't do this anymore. I can't take this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to walk away. And that's sort of a defining point, I think, for people dealing with this. I mean, this monster that is Kickstarter and crowdsourcing and crowdfunding has changed everything. And not entirely for the better, but for the most part. I mean, it's become a necessary manner of doing business now. And it's offered opportunities that publishers like myself and creators across the world never had. I mean, all this is magic.
Jump in and make one point very closely related to that I think is absolutely critical, and that is that Kickstarter is perhaps the worst learning environment there possibly could be. Kickstarter is great if you've done something before and you want to do something similar again, but if you have not done something, trying to learn how to do it in the public eye in front of people who have paid you money is a nightmare waiting to happen. This is really a lousy place to try to learn. Go ahead, make the mistake, if possible on your own dime, if not possible on your own dime, then on some large company's dime before you go out and try and make that on the fan base that you're trying to build, because that's your reputation, and if you compromise that reputation, you can't recover that. You can't earn that again, at least not as easily.
Yeah, I would definitely. I don't want to mention any names. I'm sure we all have a short list in our head of Kickstarters that we don't want to emulate, but absolutely, because it's a big spotlight. I'm thinking of one I'm not going to name from 2 or 3 years back, which at the time was the most funded RPG Kickstarter ever. You know, Kickstarter was relatively new 3 years ago, and the dude still has delivered. It's 3 years later.
And, well, I have more sympathy than probably a lot of people do. There's no one's wrong for having a negative feeling about I put something into this and I don't feel like I've gotten anything back and I don't feel like I've gotten adequate communication. But I know that nightmare. I mean, John's talking about it is a nightmare. You go in thinking you've got it figured out. I mean, I'm a professional for many years, and I screwed this up. And there, but for the grace of the universe or whatever you want to believe in, I understand the dividing line. I understand that moment of decision of, do I just walk away from this because I can't do it and I'm going to try to move on and hope people will somehow let me come back? Or am I going to take the honorable path? And I'm going to eat this thing, and I'm going to tell them that I made a mistake, but I'm going to own it, and I'm going to do my best. And thankfully, thank you all, whoever my fans and backers and friends who are listening to this, hear this, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm going to start choking up here in a second. Because it is an emotional thing for me to know that I have been mostly forgiven for screwing it up, and that I have been supported in doing my best to keep it going forward, while people have accepted that, you know, this new Savage Rifts project is something I have to do because I have to feed my family, I have to live, I have to make a living, and I did not do the other project, Shine to Our Well. It's not a moneymaker, it's a loss, but it is one I am obligated to fulfill for the sake of myself, for the sake of the Savage Mojo people who committed time and heart and resources to it, and whose reputations are also wrapped up in this thing. Evil Beagle's reputation is wrapped up in this thing, which means Ross and Corinne are now attached to it. There's too many people upon whom I will not betray. But it is an act of will. It is an act of commitment and determination beyond anything that remotely resembles financial compensation to push this ball forward while I have to do other things.
So if we were to sum up the combined wisdom of the last 30 minutes, it sounds like budget conservatively is maybe the big takeaway, and do that with both your time and your money in terms of stretch goals and what you need to produce every unit.
That's a very fair summation. And the other one that I think is very important is know what you're doing going in. If you can have done it before, that's a really big help. And keep in mind that things don't always scale linearly. Know your expertise. Do your research. Accursed probably wasn't as profitable as it might have been because we didn't want to do physical delivery. We looked at that and said, look, I'm not running a warehouse out of my garage, and none of the three of us that were coordinating to run the project had ever done a large-scale physical fulfillment. So we pawned that off on Drive-Thru RPG.
I advised you to do that, and that's one of the pieces of information that I stand by. That was the one thing I said, I think I said right.
Oh, absolutely. It was. I think that was a huge help for us, and it for future Kickstarters, that's something that I think can be a really big help.
Physical delivery is a nightmare. I mean, I don't care what you're making. I don't care if you're determined to do a Kickstarter to produce dice. If you're determined to do a Kickstarter that produces miniatures. If you're a Kickstarter determined to do teacups. Here's your problem, and this is outside of the game industry. This is industry. Well, this is business wide. Anytime you're producing physical product that you're going to have to ship, you have added exponentially huge number of variables that you cannot control. I can't tell you how many Kickstarters of friends and people I believe in where they got a bid and they said, I can do this. Yay, we can do this. That bid was a bid, and there's all the language in those contracts that protects the person who bid that from anywhere near the retribution that they should receive for the failure. I mean, you're talking about most of the time this is stuff being done in China because it is such a cut rate versus what you could get produced here. But the moment you produce something in China, you've suddenly got shipment hell, and you don't know when those crates. There are containers that have been sitting for over a year in a dock somewhere that still haven't been opened up because of one thing or five things or whatever, because they were shoving your batch of miniatures inside a container that turned out to have been containing, you know, slave trade or drugs or who knows what. So your stuff's shut in there because it's part of an evidence locker now, and you'll never see it.
Or if your game's workshop, it might sink. And there might be models sitting at the bottom of the Atlantic somewhere.
So there's any number of ways that can screw up that you have no control over, and the problem is it happens all the time.
Something we should consider that maybe we haven't said in this podcast yet is doing business with China is dicey in ways that are really hard to predict.
It's still being done. Don't get me wrong. Most of the industry that is producing books on a larger scale than print-on-demand can handle in an effective, in a revenue-effective way. Now, that to be clear, DriveThruRPG and RPG Now are producing incredibly high-quality books, and fulfillment is way easier now than it ever was. But there is still, if you're talking 500 books, that's about where you've reached your limit. Once you get to 1,000, 2,000, more than that, printing in China is still making sense. But then you got to do your research and make sure you're really dealing with the right company, because there's two or three companies that will undercut them, and you'll think, God, I could really use that margin. But you're going to pay for it in ways you don't want to. So you've got to do your research even there. There are reputable companies in China to do business with. Talk to other publishers. We're here. Come talk to us. We'll tell you, or we'll put you in touch with somebody who can. You know, it's just you've got to do that extra detail lever. You get so excited, and you like grab that first or second thing, and you go, oh my God, those numbers make so much sense. Well, they probably make sense for a reason that's not necessarily what you want. So be skeptical.
Going along the funding route, did you guys start seeing, now that Kickstarter is becoming more prominent and more people know about it, a deluge of email and unsolicited messages from people who say, hey, I saw your Kickstarter. It looks great. Here's what I can do for you. Did you guys see a lot of that?
I am on, it must be hundreds of mailing lists. My spam folder is constantly filled with them.
Oh, no, that's true. My spam filter probably is catching way more than I...
But, yeah, I get...
getting it because you had somebody else managing your Kickstarter.
That's Corinne again, folks. I forgot, and she's right. Poor Gail over at Savage Mojo is getting all those messages, so never mind. I retract my statement.
Yeah,
I got protected by that one.
I get on the order of 15 to 20 a day. We can make your game cheaper, we can print your book cheaper, you need to enter our contest, and so on and so forth. And they just go into the spam folder.
Kickstarter and crowdfunding has created so many cottage industries, and it's changed the way business works. It just has, especially for this type of business, any kind of content creation business. Kickstarter and its ilk have changed everything. In many ways for the better, but, you know, caveat emptor, you've got to be smart.
There's always a carpetbagger looking to make a buck off of your buck, no matter how small your buck is.
Take everything John Dunn says to the bank, folks. Like, that's all.
What about guys looking for their big break in the RPG industry?
You know the mantra about making a small fortune in the gaming industry, right? Start with a large fortune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's the thing, it is doable, but you've got to have some serious talent and some serious dedication. And as John says, do not use Kickstarter as your testing ground. Start out playing, not just with your friends, but people you've never met before. Go to some cons, run some stuff, test, play, you know, show some stuff off to some people. Make sure in a smaller, you know, microcosm that you're on the right track with stuff and not just blowing smoke up your own tail end before you throw all the money and assets and resources onto the Kickstarter. Because if you make an idiot of yourself there, it's very difficult to come back from that.
And building on that, that I think is important, is Kickstarter is a god-awful, horrible place to build your fan base. You need to have fans who are going to be interested in your Kickstarter before the Kickstarter launches. You can build that fan base by being active on social media, by having your blog, by publishing something small other places first. As Sean said, by building up contacts through conventions, whether those are physical conventions or online conventions, forums, wherever, whatever way you like to communicate with people, you've got to have at least some degree of reputation in place first, because when that Kickstarter launches, if you don't have at least a handful of backers in those first 24 to 48 hours, people aren't going to jump on board later. You're already dead in the water.
Here's to follow up on that. That's one of the things I did right. The reason why ShineTar is successful, as messed up and as problematic as it is a successful Kickstarter. I will stand by that statement. It's not successfully fulfilled, but it is fulfilling. But it worked on a lot of levels because I spent a lot of time building up a lot of interest and fan base and everything else around what I was doing ahead of time. ShineTar was already known. There's been a book out for it before. I was known in the Savage Worlds community, and for before that, the Champions and Star Wars and other communities. So I had that cachet going in, and I spent a lot of time beating the drum before the Kickstarter ever launched. Spent a lot of time talking to the fan base and saying, what do you guys want to see in a Kickstarter? What would you like to have happen? So I had that going for me. And somebody with my abilities, or even better at all this than I am, which there are plenty of, but with no knowledge or understanding of you know, no connection to the fan base or anything like that, back then, and I say back then like it was so long ago, it was only been a couple of years, but even so, it's changed so dramatically. Back then, you might still have managed to come out if you had a good cover piece, pretty decent video, and you talked to enough people on a few websites, you could probably still get some attention. It has exploded so much. It is such a de rigueur approach to doing business now. I mean, there's a Kickstarter launching, it almost seems like every day, just in our hobby. And if not, certainly one or two a week. And that's so it's hard for us to compete with each other, like those of us who have a name at all in this industry. You know, we're struggling to balance with each other. It's like, oh, dude, hang on, don't launch your Kickstarter yet. I'm launching mine this week. Give me a couple of weeks. I mean, we're bumping into each other constantly. So if you have no knowledge, right, or nobody knows who you are, if you're coming in fresh, you better get somebody with a name or something or whatever doing something for you, because just there's so much, there's only so much headspace now, and you'll be fighting for it. You're going to be fighting hard to get any kind of attention at all.
Yeah, it's not like the early days. It was kind of a gold rush. Now it's a little more measured and a little more calculating than it was.
Yeah, at this point, to draw on that analogy, now they're going for the silver and the copper and the zinc and whatever else they can get out of those holes and to keep mining. And the mines are full of lots of good stuff, but it is not the gold anymore.
Yeah, soon you're just going for nitrate and calcium and, you know, I don't even know if you mine for calcium. Do you mine for calcium? Anybody know? You just dismilk milk cows for that. I don't. Sorry, I'm getting off subject.
Yeah, you give up on the mines and go to agriculture. Tomatoes. I should have raised tomatoes. I don't even like it.
Hey, you can now have chickens in your backyard yard in Denver. Did you know that?
I don't want them, but sure, why not?
Well, yeah, that's, I guess it depends on how much you like chickens. But fresh egg. Why are we talking about chickens? You know what? It's, those six cocktails for lunch were probably a bad idea.
Could have been seven.
Yeah. Walt, over to you. What do you say?
Do your calculations early. I think a great piece of advice that Sean gave is that these publishers that have done Kickstarters before are approachable, and the greatest thing we want to see is people who succeed, because that brings the rest of us up. And the fact that somebody's willing to lose their sanity for 30 to 45 days and do one of these, approach one of these publishers and ask them, what did you do right, what did you do wrong, and can I sit down with you for 5 minutes and just pick your brain?
I described the Kickstarter experience, actually being involved in the promotion and you know, daily management of a Kickstarter. I described it as, you know, riding a tornado across a hurricane with a 500-pound gorilla on your back screaming, "You're not doing enough!" 30 days into my Kickstarter.
I'm pretty sure every Kickstarter takes at least 2 years off your life expectancy.
Yeah, I think so. I shave my head, so you can't see all the gray. I think John actually and Sean had touched on this earlier. You guys, when you did your Kickstarter, you were the first guys I saw that said, back our project, you get all this great stuff, but if you want a print book, we'll talk. And I thought that was really inventive, because I know in a couple of cases, shipping kicked me in the tail. And I think looking at shipping realistically, especially when you're dealing with possible a pallet of product coming from someplace like China, you know, looking at all of these other things realistically is a smart way to go, especially when you're talking about extras like monogrammed car mats or T-shirts or posters for your wall. I mean, that all that stuff adds up. So
yeah, I think that kills.
Fred of Evil Hat Games is a brilliant guy, and he runs just amazing Kickstarters. And yep. If you look at his track records and his posts on his Kickstarters, he's talked about just how bad they got nailed with shipping on multiple instances, particularly when the postal system changed their rates after the Kickstarter had already ended. That can happen at any time. Post office isn't really under a whole lot of obligation to give you, 6 months heads up saying, we're going to change our rates. And that's, you can plan for it, but the way they might change their rates is not necessarily going to be even within the order of magnitude you might expect. And when the books show up, they might not weigh exactly what you expect them to be, even if you were quoted that. That's a big gotcha.
Being brutally honest is the way we took it. We're like, look, guys, shipping is, and we can either make this tier cost a ridiculous amount for everybody, which you're not going to want to pay, to make sure that we evenly cover shipping for everybody, or we're going to have to wrap shipping up as an additional cost after it's all said and done. And a lot of publishers, especially at the smaller level, that's what they have to do, is say, your support gets you the book, but, gets you the printed book. It doesn't account for shipping, and we're going to ask you to pay that afterwards.
Yeah, it's that's not what a, we're doing on the...
it's not pretty.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's not pretty, but it's the only way to do it and not die, not just completely blow it.
On the Supervillain Handbook, we're doing that. You know, basically, there's a deal with RPG Now where I can give a backer, you know, here's a coupon to buy the print on demand book at cost, and you pay for the shipping.
Yeah, RPG is an incredibly useful ally for really publishing across the board, and they've gotten smart about supporting publishers with their Kickstarters, because of course that means they get the book on the system so they can sell to everybody who didn't do the Kickstarter, which, by the way, another note from Sean on what not to do, because he did it that way. You know, I assumed that I was going to be getting a significant amount of additional revenue on these books once they were published and sent out to the backers. Problem is, the nature of, and I should have known this, I've actually counseled people about this elsewhere, but my eyes got bright, and I was an idiot. I thought, well, okay, you know, shortly after Kickstarter, well, I didn't really pay myself. But that's okay, because once we've published these products, once the backers get them, I can sell these, and I'll make money on that. But the backers constituted a really large portion of my audience for purchasing the book in the first place. So getting it via the Kickstarter meant they weren't going to buy it elsewhere. So that's been...
Yeah, I mean, a guy like you who has a large engaged audience, they're engaged. They see you're doing Kickstarter, they want to support it.
Yeah.
Which is great because they're supporting it. On the other hand, there might not be a big after Kickstarter market because everybody who wants it, they already bought it.
So, yeah, that was the truth.
Yeah.
Guys, I may need to get going here. I'm thinking there's something else going on I may have to deal with. So, is it okay if I go ahead and bow out?
I think we're out. We've been talking for about an hour. Anything else you want to cover before we wrap it up and call it a podcast?
I'm good, guys. I enjoyed it very much. But
nice talking to you, John. Sean, you have anything else you want to weigh in on before we wrap it up?
I think we covered all of my key points. Thank you for an opportunity to share them with you.
Yeah, sounds good. Hey, appreciate both of you guys joining us. Mr. Walt, as always, appreciate you hosting it for us.
Good deal. Anytime.
All right. Okay. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll check you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Oh, there is. Oh, that's good.